Okay, so just we're going to get started just with a one minute of introduction. That it's a tremendous chus that we are very fortunate that Rabbi Friedman was able to take a few minutes from his busy schedule to come join us here this afternoon. It's a tremendous opportunity that we have. You know, there's a concept, as we all know about the concept of a mesorah, having a mesorah in much of what we do in life. Much of our ruchnias is following a mesorah, a tradition, a chain that's passed down from Rebbe to Talmud all the way back to Har Sinai. So the same way we have a mesorah in many areas of our ruchnias, of our avodas Hashem, there's a mesorah in halacha also. There's a famous shmuz that the Rosh Hashiva Zatzal said on a marsha in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that there was a story with Rav Chiya, who once admitted to doing something that he didn't do. He admitted to a wrongdoing that he never committed in order to save somebody else from embarrassment. And to spare somebody else from some shame, he took the hit. And the Gemara says, where did he learn from to do such a thing? The Gemara says that he learned it from Rav Meir. And Rav Meir, where did Rav Meir learn it from? Rav Meir learned it from Shmuel. Shmuel learned it from a fellow Shechni ben Yechiel, who learned it from Yeshua, going all the way back up to Yeshua ben Nun, who did a similar thing. And the Mashal over there makes the point of saying that Rav Chiya could have gone straight back. He knew about Yeshua. He could have done the same thing. He could have said that Yeshua did the same thing. So I learned from Yeshua how a person is supposed to behave. But he didn't do that. Mashal said that he specifically had to go back to the Rebbe before him, all the way up to Yeshua. Because that's the... when we want to know what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to act, so it's not just enough we found a sefer from a few hundred years ago that says this is what you're supposed to do. There's a specific mesorah of how to pask and how to apply the psak and apply halacha to every generation. We follow the Arabanim, Arabeim, who are mekabel from their Arabeim going all the way back. That's the way that we're supposed to live our lives. So, Baruch Hashem, there's specifically when it comes to asking halachic shailos and to getting a psak, there's many different types of questions that we ask. We ask questions that we really should know the answers to. There's sometimes we ask questions that you have to have a little bit of a knowledge of background in halacha to be able to answer. And then there's questions that even if you have a background in halacha, there's still a lot of ambiguity, a lot of vagueness in knowing how do you apply that. There's a lot of different kinds, a lot of different halachas, and how does that apply to my current situation? And it's specifically in those areas that we look to our poskim, who spent many years learning through the halachas, getting shemesh from gedolim before them, and we rely on them to help us, to guide us in knowing the proper halacha, how to apply things to our daily life, especially in areas that are not necessarily so clear. So, Baruch Hashem, it's a tremendous chus that we have in our community. Someone like Rabbi Friedman, who is mahana so many people, answering questions from all across the country, not just from Florida, but we have a chus to have him here, and it's a tremendous kava that Rabbi Friedman agreed to give us a few minutes today to go over some of the questions that we have and to address them. One point that I would like to ask, since the timing is a little bit short, so if everybody could please hold any follow-up questions, or if we will try to get as many questions and discussions as he's able to. Get all the follow-up questions, hopefully after Mincha, or if we will be around for a few more minutes if anybody would like to follow up on any questions. As I said, anything we don't get to now, we hope to have more opportunities like this in the future to be able to, that we can answer some more of our questions. But without further ado, it's a tremendous hakar tov to Rabbi Friedman, and I'll turn the floor over to you.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Schlissel. Appreciate it's a schuss for me to be able to address such a chashuva olam. So there are a lot of questions that were given to me on these cards. Probably won't be able to get to all of them today, but like Rabbi Schlissel said, perhaps we'll have opportunities in the future. Many of the questions are details within a broad topic. So there are a few broad topics that are touched upon, and as I said, there are specific details asked. So perhaps what we'll do is address some of the details, but by doing so, we'll have to take a step back and maybe just discuss a little bit the broader topic, and then hopefully be able to understand the answer to the specific questions that were asked. So let's start with a number of questions that relate to davening, questions of skipping and davening in order to catch the tzibur by Shemen Esrei, or perhaps not even to catch the tzibur, to catch the chazen by the chazaras hashatz, and related things. So let's just take a couple of minutes to discuss this inyan. First of all, it's very, very important to know that as much as davening could be at this stage in your life something that is a bit challenging and something which you don't necessarily always fully appreciate, especially on every single day when you have to get up in the morning when you're still perhaps a little bit groggy and come here and be able to sit through, or not just sit through, but participate in and be involved in a rather long davening. Shacharis is the longest davening. So it's challenging, and there's no question about it. Nobody's going to deny that, especially for younger Talmidim. But it really is something that you, with time, that you begin to appreciate, and you have to have that as a real goal, to begin more and more to appreciate what davening is, and the opportunity to daven, and the fact that in the morning we don't just fall into Shemona Esrei, so to speak, but we have, first, before we have brachas, and we have psukah de zimra, which are packed, as if you pay attention to what you're saying, and if you don't understand it, you can look at the English, and to realize all the tremendous shvach and praises of Hashem you're saying, the praises of Hashem and the chesed of Hashem that He does for us, and to realize it and appreciate it, and to generate to a appreciation for who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, so then when we start getting to, can we get close to Shemona Esrei, we're more motivated to daven properly. Shemona Esrei is called Omi Lefnei HaMelech, when you're standing before the king as if you've entered the royal palace and now you're making your official requests of the king. So before you do that, the more you remind yourself and you become focused on who the king is and how great the king is and how capable he is and how much he wants to help us and do for us, then the more you're going to be into your Shemona Esrei, because you know that you're asking a being that has the ability to grant all your wishes if he feels that that's the right thing to do, and he taka wants to do what's best for you, and he only does what's best for us, etc., etc. But we remind ourselves through Pesukim de Zimra, if done properly, and even through brachos, when we talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's pokeach ivrim, that he opens the eyes of the blind, and he gives us clothing to wear, and he helps us stand up straight, etc., etc. We remind ourselves on a daily basis of who Hashem is, what Hashem is, and what he's capable of. Okay, so now, with that approach, some of the questions we asked is about skipping parts of Pesukim de Zimra in order to be able to move ahead in the davening. So let's first answer some specific questions and then again go back. The halacha says that yes, one is the main advantage and mitzvah of tefillah b'tzibur is to daven Shemona Esrei with the tzibur, to start, which means to start Shemona Esrei more or less at the same time as the tzibur, the minyan, is starting. And by the way, of course, a person could daven Shemona Esrei and needs to daven Shemona Esrei even if he's alone, if he doesn't have a minyan, or he's in a place where there is no minyan, or he's not capable of coming to minyan, or he missed the minyan, whatever it is, you still have to daven Shemona Esrei. But the maila, the advantage of davening with a minyan, is so much great, it's so great, so phenomenal, so much greater than davening b'yichidus, that it's something that we have to try to take advantage of in under any circumstance we possibly can. So davening with the minyan means primarily starting Shemona Esrei exactly with the tzibur, or certainly within a very short time. Some poskim define as within when you still have 10 people saying the first bracha Shemona Esrei, which doesn't take that long. So pretty much you want to be able to start with the tzibur. So to do that, if you are behind, and the only way to do that would be to skip something, otherwise you're not going to start with the tzibur, then you are allowed to do that. And skip what? So you would skip part of Pesukim de Zimra. There's a order of priority of what's more, let's call it more important, more critical within Shemona Esrei, what's a little bit less critical. We won't go into all those details now. Perhaps you learned that, or you could check that out, what that is. But it is permissible and even proper, at least on an occasional basis, to skip part of Pesukim de Zimra in order to be able to daven with the tzibur. Now, if by skipping you're still not going to make it, let's say a person comes in very late for whatever reason one morning, he's way behind, and even if he skips, he's not going to be able to start Shemona Esrei with the tzibur. But he's heard this idea that you could start with the chazan. Even when the chazan starts chazaras hashatz, you could start, and maybe you've even heard the idea that perhaps that's even considered like davening b'tzibur. So, lahalacha, Number one, it is not permissible to skip Sukkah Dezimra to do that. Davening with the Shliach Tzibur is a question. There are poskim that say that it's considered like davening b'tzibur, but others disagree with that firmly. There's a tshuva in the Igros Moshe from Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, whose tshuvas we follow to a large extent, who very strongly disagrees with that, says that it is not considered davening b'tzibur. You don't get credit for davening with the minyan. You're allowed to start with the Shliach Tzibur rather than having to wait, which means, just very briefly, the halacha is if you don't start with the minyan, if you don't start with the minyan, then you're not even allowed to start Shemona Esrei unless you know you're going to finish in time to answer to Kedusha. Meaning if you're behind and you're ready to start Shemona Esrei when they're already halfway through. So if you start now, when the Chazan gets up to Kedusha, you're going to still be in the middle of Shemona Esrei. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to start Shemona Esrei in the shul, and put yourself in a position where you're going to miss Kedusha. If you're starting with the minyan and you're just a slow davener, or maybe they're fast daveners, or a little bit of both, so you know you're going to miss Kedusha, even if that happens on a regular basis, that's mutter. As long as you start with the minyan. But if you don't start with the minyan, and you start somewhere in the middle, you're not allowed to start if you're going to find yourself in the middle when they get up to Kedusha. So there the Shulchan Aruch says, but you could start with the Chazan. If you're going to be able to keep pace with the Chazan, sometimes the Chazan goes even a little bit quicker, hopefully not in a yeshiva, but if you're davening in a shul, very often the Chazan goes a little bit quicker. But if you know that you're going to start with the Chazan and you could keep pace with the Chazan, then you're allowed to do that. And rather than having to just wait till after Kedusha and after Kaddish and everything, start with the Chazan, and then you daven along with him through Kedusha, which means you say every word of Kedusha that he says, as if you're the Chazan. You say it quietly, but you say in the Kaddish Shimcha Ba'olam, and you say even in the Ashkenaz Minyan, you say L'dor V'dor Nagid God Lecha, you don't say Ato Kadosh. You sort of like make believe you're the Chazan. So you end up not saying Ato Kadosh that morning, but that's okay, just like at a Mincha Minyan where there's Hecha Kedusha, where the Chazan Davin's up ahead, he doesn't say Ato Kadosh, he says L'dor V'dor, but that's okay. So you're allowed to do that, and if you start with the Chazan. But, as I said, it doesn't mean it's considered Tefillah B'Tzibur. It's just a heter to do that rather than to have to miss Kedusha. And you're not allowed to skip Sukkah Dezimra for that. If you know you're so far behind that you're not going to make, you're not going to make Tefillah B'Tzibur, you'll only make with the Shliach Tzibur, then you can't do that. Now, you can't skip to do that. Let me just address one more specific question, then I want to go back a minute. One of the questions was, if I come in to yeshiva and I'm wearing sneakers, and there's a rule that I have to wear shoes, regular shoes for davening, it's going to put me more behind. So the halacha definitely is you have to do it nonetheless, for many reasons. First of all, when you daven, you're supposed to dress in an appropriate way. The yeshiva doesn't have a rule that you have to wear shoes because they want to make things, your life, more difficult for you. Now, they have enough rules making life difficult. There are a few of those. But this one is not for that reason. Don't tell them I said that. But this one is for sure not, that's not the reason. It's not to make life more difficult. It's to make davening more appropriate. Really, if you look at you learn the Gemara in Shabbos at the middle of the first parak of Shabbos, talks about when you daven, we said before, you're omen b'fnei ha-melech, you're supposed to dress like you would b'fnei ha-melech. You're supposed to dress the way you would if you're going to the king, to a king, to ask, make requests. So you wouldn't walk in sneakers and whatever, jeans. You would dress a little bit more appropriately. So technically, the best thing would be if everyone put on a suit and a hat and a tie and everything for every shachas, every mincha, every marv. Okay, so there's just so much we could ask of ourselves and of others. So, but shoes is a basic thing. So number one, you'd have to do it for that reason. Number two, if it's the yeshiva rule, even if it was there just to make life difficult for you, but if that's the rule, obviously you have to comply with the rule. But now, having said all this, let's go back a step, and let me ask you a question. If you had to make a flight, you had to go somewhere, and the flight was called for 8 o'clock. So would anybody here expect to show up at the airport at 8 o'clock, or even at the airport, even at the gate? Show up at the gate at 8 o'clock and expect to get on the flight? No way. No way in the world, unless the flight is delayed. But if the flight's not delayed, if you show up at 8 o'clock for an 8 o'clock flight, you don't stand a chance of getting on the airplane. 8 o'clock means that's the time the flight is ready to, you know, take off. The wheel's going to leave the ground. And now you have to make a cheshbon based on that time. What time do I need to get to the airport to make it realistic to be ready and to go like a mensch, so I don't have to go flying through the air, running through the, you know, the terminal either with my suit, you know, and go like a mensch and come in properly and be able to get on the flight properly. So I use 8 o'clock just as the takeoff time, and based on that, I figure, do I have to get there 7 o'clock, 6, whatever the time is. So really, half of the should be the same way with davening. If Shacharis starts at 8 o'clock, that doesn't mean that if I walk into the Medrash at 8 o'clock, you know, I just run out of my the car and or the whatever, and I run in here, I'm here, 8 o'clock, that I'm on time. You're really not on time, because what happened to Talis and Tefillin? What happened to, first of all, catching your breath and wiping off your brow, and maybe putting on your shoes if you came in and sneakers, and Talis and Tefillin, and getting yourself ready? 8 o'clock just means that that's takeoff time. So now you have to use that as a time to figure out what time you really should be at shul in order to daven properly, to daven like a mensch, to daven with yeshiva das, and perhaps, especially if it's not the yeshiva, and if you're davening in a local shul for any time, you know, when you don't have yeshiva, then they probably daven a little bit faster also, and you might want to add a few more minutes to that time that you have to get there in order that you could even start a little bit earlier to make sure that you don't have to skip Sikkun Zimma. Skipping Sikkun Zimma could be done, and it should be done when you're stuck, but it shouldn't be routine, it shouldn't be the norm, it should be an exception if you, for some reason, you got held up that particular morning, there was a tremendous traffic jam, and it took 10 extra minutes to get to yeshiva, or whatever else, you know, whatever the reason might be. We're all human, and we have frailties, and there are things that hold us up, but that should be the exception rather than the rule. And there's something else I want to point out, which I think is very important to know, that even if you do skip Sukkot Dezimra, and then you're catching up while they're saying Birchas Kriyishma, Kriyishma, you're catching up, you're lagging a little bit behind, you're finishing Oz Yashir, as the Chazan is, as they're saying, you know, Yotzer, or whatever it is, it's still not perfect, because and even if you didn't skip, whether you skip Sukkot Zimmer or not, there's a very big mila in being up to Baruch Hu when the tzib is up to Baruch Hu. Meaning, the main way to daven Berachas Kriyishma with a minion is that you answer Baruch Hu and then you proceed right into Berachas Kriyishma, Yotzer or Avarei Choshech. If you're still not finished Pesukah Dezimra, you're allowed to continue. You are allowed to continue if you want to finish and not have to skip, or even if you are skipping but you want to finish and say Yishtabach. But it's not ideal. Ideal davening is that, besides that you're up to them with Shemona Esrei, the ideal davening is that when they say Baruch Hu, and the Chazan says Baruch Hu, you answer the Baruch Hu, and you right away sit down and begin Yotzer Ar. And that really should be part of, you know, your goal. Now, okay, we said a few different things. There's a lot to incorporate. If this is not what you're used to, so then it's a little bit of a, you know, change of attitude, change of hashkafa. And if you can't implement it tomorrow morning or the next morning, but it's at least should be a goal. It should be something that you strive to in terms of, and this will, you know, improve your davening. And if you improve your davening, it really will, you'll find with time, you'll find it improves your day. It improves your learning. It improves your, improves everything. Hopefully, Bez Hashem, as you get older, you'll be, you know, you appreciate it more. Okay, so that covers some of the davening topic. Now, there's another question which is a little bit isolated, but Rabbi Schlissel did stress it, said a number of people discussing it, so let's just discuss that. And that is, the question is, if you're benching, you're in yeshiva and you're benching and you get up to Harachman, where if you're in your parents' house, you would say Harachman Yivarech is Avi Mori Balabaiseze, Vimi Moresi Balasabaiseze. What do I say? What should one say if he's in yeshiva? His parents aren't here. Who should he give the bracha to? So many do say that if you Baruch Hashem, you have parents who are supporting you, sending you to yeshiva, and they're paying your tuition, so then that's enough of a reason to mention them as well, to give kavod to them, and not just kavod, but the hakaras hatov, that they might not be the one that scrambled this egg that you're eating now, where they cooked this piece of chicken, but they are the ones that facilitated the fact that you're in yeshiva, and maybe you have this, you know, they have this meal to eat. So it's still kedai to say that. So now you wouldn't use the words balabais, you wouldn't say avi mori balabais, but you'd say avi mori vimi morasi, and to say veskala mesubin kan, to include all the people that you're eating with that are included in this bracha. That would be the right thing to say. If situation where a person is on his own, maybe you're already in yeshiva gedola and you're totally on your own, your parents said, look, you're old enough to take care of yourself and etc., then you could just, you know, it still wouldn't be a bad thing to give a bracha to your parents, but the chiyuv would be perhaps a little bit less to do it specifically than during benching. And the main thing would be to say, Arachim Yivarech is called a mesubin kan. That would be the ikur thing to say. Okay, so now there are a number of questions that involve halachas of bishul on Shabbos. Could be that you're learning that, or some of you are learning that in halacha. It sounds like some of the questions that you are learning, at least some of you are learning these inyanim. So we'll focus on bishul, of course, as a broad topic, but let's focus on one of the main areas that some of the questions address. And that is that When it comes to bish, bishel means cooking on Shabbos. The one of the 39 malachas, cooking or baking or frying, roasting, any form of preparing food through heat there is called under the general heading of mevashel or ofe on Shabbos. And the main malacha applies to raw food that has not been cooked yet at all. It's completely raw. So if you cook it on Shabbos, you make it edible or even partially edible through one of those means, through any means of fire, that's you've violated one of the 39 malachas of Shabbos. If food has been already cooked, let's say it's already mevushel. Now, technically, bishel means cooked in water, cooked in liquid. So let's say you have a food that was already cooked in liquid, and now it's cooled off. So if it's a solid food, it was completely cooked, ready to eat, but now it was cooked before Shabbos, and by now it's cold, but it's still cooked. So the din is ein bishel achar bishel. There's no isser of sort of quote-unquote recooking. I mean, there's no isser on reheating it. You may not be able to put it on the stovetop. In fact, you're not allowed to. You have to be careful how you reheat it. That gets into a whole other area of shehiyah and chazar, etc. So exactly how you reheat it is a question, but which we can't get into all the details of that right now. But the fact that it got hot again is not a problem if it was completely cooked and you reheat it in the same fashion that it was originally cooked. So, like, one of the questions here was about instant soups. If you get a cup of instant soup on Shabbos, are you allowed to add hot water? So the question would be, the issue at hand is, are you being mevashel? Are the question we have to determine is, are the ingredients, the components of this soup, what's in that cup, were they cooked already or were they not cooked already? If there's anything in that cup that's completely raw, that was not cooked, then you would not be able to add hot water, because adding hot water is also called cooking, even though you're not putting it on any type of fire, you're not exposing it to any direct fire, but cooking with hot water, if the water is a kli shown, if this water is actually the water that was actually heated up on the fire in its current state, then it's a malacha d'oraisa. Cook, it's not the av malacha, but it's a tolda. You probably learned about there are 39 avos and many toldos. It's a tolda of bishel to cook in hot water. So, and even if you would pour it over from the original utensil in which it was cooked into something, to another cup, like which we would call a klisheni, it's still not simple, and that you're allowed to cook. What you're allowed to cook in a klisheni and what you're not has many details. So let's start with that. If there's anything in that cup that's completely raw, you cannot add hot water to it. If there are things there that were cooked, but perhaps they weren't cooked through bishel, perhaps they were cooked through what's called afia, they were baked, meaning they were cooked without water. Now, baked doesn't mean it's a piece of cake in the cup or a piece of bread. It could be something, it could be any type of food, but if it's cooked without water, without liquid, that's called that it's afui, baked, and you're still not allowed to cook it on Shabbos through bishel. That's called yesh bishel achar afia. Even though it might have been completely edible, but if it was made edible without water, you're not allowed to reheat it through water, unless you, at this point, it would be okay if you poured the water over two times, so that the water came from, let's say, a electric urn, and you pour it into a cup, and from that cup into a second cup. So that second cup we would call the kli shlishi. The kli rishon is the urn, the kli sheni is the first cup, and the kli shlishi is the second cup. If you take that kli shlishi water, that you'd be allowed to pour into the soup if there's nothing there that's completely raw, but there are things there that were made edible, but not through bishel, through non-liquid manner. So you're allowed to reheat them with liquid from a kli shlishi. That you'd be allowed to do. Now that's assuming again that everything in the cup is solid. You know, there's no liquid in the cup. There's no cold liquid in the cup. There are only cold solids. So then that would be the basic rule. Again, if there's anything completely raw, you should not cook. You should not add hot water at all. If there's anything that was cooked and made edible, but not cooked through a liquid process, then you could reheat it. But the way to do it would be to make the water first into a kli shlishi. So that's really what you have to determine about any particular soup, any particular brand that you have. Try to investigate if there's something you're not sure about, you know, examine the ingredients beforehand, and if there's something you're not sure about, you should try to inquire either by the company or maybe by the hechsher, whoever gives the hechsher on that particular brand of soup. Perhaps the rov who gives the hechsher could tell you if there's any concerns there of things that can't be cooked in Shabbos. That would really determine that halacha. Now, there was a question here about a ladle. If a ladle, the questioner wrote that you learned that a ladle sitting in a pot of soup is treated like the pot itself, meaning to say what he means to say is that once you put it, if the soup is a kli rishon, let's just say now, if you put a ladle into the kli rishon and you leave it there, particularly if the soup is still on the source of heat, but even if you removed it, many say that once you put the ladle in and leave it there a little bit, then the ladle itself, when you pull out the ladle with the soup, that soup is not a kli sheni, many say, because it was the ladle itself got heated up in the kli rishon. Like I said, if it happens on the fire, then that's for sure that way, because you put the ladle into the pot on the fire, so now the ladle is like another kli on the fire. Then it's for sure a kli rishon. I just add here, typically we don't do that. We don't typically ladle out of something while it's still on the fire or still on the electric element. If it's plain water, you can. If you have plain water with nothing in it, and you would be allowed to scoop out even though it's directly on the fire. But once you have food in it and stuff, it's not kedai to do that. You should take it off the fire first. But even if you take it off the fire, assuming the water in the kli is still burning hot, when you put the ladle in and it stays there for a little bit, then the liquid in the ladle is very likely considered a kli rishon even when you take it out. So that would be true even by a plastic ladle, assuming it's still yatzo ledesbo. Yes. Now, the question was asked that plastic cools off much more quickly. So that's true. But once it cools off, once the liquid inside cools off, of course it's not going to be a concern of bishul anymore. Cools off means it's not yatzo ledesbo. Yatzo ledesbo. There's a big range of to define how what temperature that is in our units of measure, but let's just say to be safe, the poskim say that you should consider even if it's as little as about 110, 18, or 110, you still have to consider it that it's yatzo ledesbo. But once it's less than that, then there are no concerns of bishul. By the way, getting back to that soup, even if there's something wrong in the soup, if you will wait until the water you're pouring in till it's less than, let's say, to be safe, totally safe, 108 degrees Fahrenheit. Once it's less than that, and you still want to pour it into your soup, and if it'll make, you know, a soup that's worth eating, that you could do, because there's no bishul at that point. It may not do much for the soup, though. You might want to try that out in advance before you count on that for your Shabbos meal. But then there'd be no problem. But going back to the plastic ladle, as long as it's still hot, we would give it the status of a kli rishon, you know, as long as the stuff in it is still hot. Now, there was an interesting question here, about the following. You apparently learned the halacha, or at least some of you learned the halacha, that let me add one more detail to be able to address this. Everything we said about till now about not being a problem of recooking, that was solid foods. With a liquid, it's different. If you have a liquid, even if it was fully cooked but it cooled off, then you're not allowed to reheat it. Even if you don't put it on a direct fire, you're not allowed to reheat a liquid on Shabbos, because a liquid, once it loses its heat, then you really can't tell it was cooked anymore. It's pretty much back to the way it was. Maybe it has, the germs and stuff, and the bacteria might still be, might not be there anymore. But in terms of our human perception, once the liquid cools off, there's not much difference between that liquid and that cup of water, which was boiling hot and now it's cold, and the next cup of water, which was never cooked. So a liquid which cools off, we treat it as if that there is an isser to recook it. You'll learn, when you learn the Shulchan Aruch Inside, you'll see it's really not so simple that that's the din, but we, in practice lalacha, we say by liquids, we say yesh bishul acha bishul, which means it is a problem to reheat a liquid once it's cooled off. Okay, so now, that having been said, some of you were taught, that even to take this liquid, well, let's even go back to a liquid that was never cooled. You take some water out of from the tap, and you want to put it in a place where it'll get warmed up a little bit, it'll lose the chill. Now, if you put it in a place where it's close enough to a fire, that if you left it there all day, if you left it there long enough, it would get to yatzo ledesbo, it would get to be 108, 110 degrees, then you're not allowed to put it there, even if you plan on taking it away. This is the halacha you learned. You're not allowed to put liquid in a place where it could get to yatzo ledesbo, even if you have every intention of moving it away before that happens, because you might forget and you might end up cooking it on Shabbos. So the question was, well, what about putting liquid into a freezer where if I leave it there long enough, it'll freeze. But I'm not going to let it freeze. I'm not going to let it. I just want to, you know, I have a bottle of soda or whatever other drink, and I want to, you know, I want to cool it off. So I want to put it in the freezer, let it cool off, and I'll make sure to take it out before it freezes. Can I do that? Or do we say, no, just like I can't put it near a fire where it might end up getting hot, even though I plan to take it away before, so maybe I can't put it into a freezer where it might end up freezing, even though I plan to take it out before. Okay, so the assumption of that question is that you're not allowed to freeze lukas on Shabbos. And so here I want to tread carefully because I'm not sure what you may have learned, but the Maisa, many poskim say you are allowed to, that you are allowed to freeze liquids on Shabbos if you're going to use them for Shabbos. For example, let's say you want to make ice cubes, which you're going to use on Shabbos. So according to many poskim, it's mutter to do that. Whereas to melt a liquid, if a liquid is frozen, to melt, to allow it to melt down, that is very questionable. That you're not allowed to do unless it's a real tzorech Shabbos. You have nothing else to drink but this frozen liquid. So then you'd be allowed to melt it down on Shabbos as long as you don't put it in a place that can get very hot, but you'd be allowed to melt it down. But otherwise you can't. Otherwise, at least in Ashkenazic halacha, you can't melt it down on Shabbos. But to freeze something, many poskim say, is okay. To make ice cubes on Shabbos, which you're planning on using on Shabbos, not preparing for after Shabbos. I need them for this Shabbos afternoon. Many say you're allowed to do that. So for that matter, if you wanted to drink a schlussy, make a schlussy type of soda or whatever, and leave it in the freezer until it freezes or partially freezes, and I'm going to drink it that way on Shabbos, you'd be allowed to do that. So that having been said, so then obviously there's no problem of putting it into the freezer where it might end up happening, because even if it does end up happening, it's okay. Now, as I said, be careful if your Rebbe taught you otherwise that you're not allowed to freeze liquids. So you could bring it up. There are positions like that, but as I said, I think it's pretty widely accepted that it is mutter to do that. Rav Moshe Feinstein, I heard, used to bring a raya. He said in Europe, everybody, after they ate Friday night, they didn't have refrigerators or ice. Maybe they had some sort of ice box, but it wasn't so efficient. They would take the leftover fish or stuff, which was liquid, and they would put it out on the windowsill, and it would turn into gel. It would freeze and turn. It wouldn't maybe become ice, but it would turn into a hard gel. And it says that was common practice. Everybody did that on Shabbos. There was no there's no issue with that. Why there's no issue? Why melting something down is worse than freezing it? That's a topic for a different time. But just in 10 seconds or less, the answer is that the kernel of the answer is that when you freeze something, it's not going to stay that way at normal conditions. At normal room temperature, it's not going to stay frozen. So it's not considered you made a significant change, because that change is going to return back to its original status at normal conditions. Whereas if you melt something at normal conditions, it's going to stay melted. You have to put it into an unusual situation, to a freezer or something, to get it back to it's not going to refreeze at normal conditions. And that's why that's considered making a real change, which you're not supposed to do on Shabbos normally, but the other way is not considered as much of a change. Okay. there's a question here which I'm not sure I'm able to answer exactly. Question is, at what point is eating considered to be achil gasa, that I can no longer eat? I know it's difficult to quantify that. I think the point, maybe the questioner answered him and said when he wrote that I can no longer eat. When you feel I really can no longer eat, and if you offer me anything else besides this, you know, this hot piping piece of pizza or this delicious ice cream sundae, anything else in the world, I wouldn't even look at it. I'm looking at it because I want to eat this. I really feel that I can. I've gotten to the point where I shouldn't be eating, but I only want to eat it because how could I pass it up? Then that's probably called achil gasa. Short of that, it's a little relative. Okay, we have a couple more minutes.
Two more minutes.
Okay. So let me take just the 2 more minutes to readdress something going at the beginning. We spoke about the question about the shoes for davening, etc. I just want to stress, you'll forgive me, this wasn't specifically asked, but it's definitely important to dress nicely in Shabbos, to dress nicely for davening. As I said, a suit and a tie would be great, but okay, we don't require that. But on Shabbos, it's kol shekein v'kol shekein, important, not just for davening, especially for davening on Shabbos when you have a combination of both, but even the rest of Shabbos, certainly when you're when you're coming to shul, when you're coming back from mincha or whatever it is, you're coming to in the afternoon. Shabbos is Shabbos for all 24 or 25 hours, and there's a chiyuv on Shabbos to dress differently. The Gemara says shlo yehi malbushcha b'Shabbos k'malbushcha b'chol. You're supposed to dress differently on Shabbos. So I think it's important that as much as a tie is not going to be a required dress during the week, but it should be required in societies such as ours. There are places where ties are, you know, you look like you're from the Mars if you wear a tie. But I would say here where we live, a tie is very standard. If you go to a chasna, very unlikely that you're going to go to a chasna without a tie. Very unlikely. So unless you wear a bekisha, okay, that's a possibility. If you wear a bekisha, then you don't have to wear a tie. But if you're not wearing a bekisha, and I think you should discuss it with your Rebbe before you decide to go that route. If you're not wearing a bekisha, then I think a tie is pretty standard. As I said, I doubt very many of you, if any of you, would go to a chasna. Unless you wanted, you know, them to throw, yeah. But you wouldn't go to chasna at a tie because it's just not nice. It's just not formal. It's substandard. So you really should look at Shabbos that way too. Going to shul, especially, but or even at the Shabbos Suda without a tie, you should look at it as substandard. It's something to keep in mind that you dress at a and Shabbos shouldn't be less than the way you dress when you go to chasna.